want to have a phenomenal culture at your company no matter what, and that means your leadership team really needs to get along well.
We're really, really good at consolidating data, and we're really, really good at consolidating people around that data.
Welcome to the show. I'm Ben Wiggins, and I am here with the co-founder of Abre, Zach Vanderveen, and James Stauffer, the CEO of Abre. Gentlemen, how are we doing this morning?
Great.
Great. Good to see you, Ben.
Good to see you as well, James. You guys look good as always. Zach, tell us a little bit about your journey with and into Abre in the beginning. Tell us a little bit about
the origin story.
Yeah, the origin story.
Yeah, no. So we came out of an actual school district, which I'm really proud of. So was facing some very difficult challenges as a CTO at Hamilton City Schools. And really the problem that I would say is everything was siloed. All the software I was having to use was pretty, frankly, crappy. It didn't do what I wanted it to do. I couldn't merge all the data that I need to actually provide answers to support my team, be that my superintendent, be that my cabinet, or even, you know, the teachers, students, and family members. Really didn't see anything that was out there. But serendipity would have it. I got to meet Chris Rose, the other co-founder, on my first day, actually, on the gig. I remember just a fun story just to throw in here. But the first time I meet him, we were at a house. I got invited. And we had this jolly old guy. He was like Santa Claus. His name was Rex Buchheit. And he was introducing me to all my new players who would be there. And so he introduced me to Chris and his fiance at the time. And he said, "Hey, this is Chris. He tried to get your job but didn't get it. Have fun." And then he just walked away and just left it to the two of us.
Enjoy, boys.
Enjoy. And I just remember like meeting Chris for the first time being like, what do you do with that, right? You're just kind of like, And in typical Chris fashion, he's like, "I just didn't want them to hire someone who sucked." Because he's just, you know, one thing about my co-founder, he's truly very, very, very humble. But we got to talking, and out of that was really this understanding of, like, the Hamilton City website at the time was brilliant, was beautiful. Most school websites are pretty junky, confusing, et cetera. He said, "Well, I did that." I'm like, "Well, what do you mean you did that?" He's like, "Well, I developed my own content management system where we're kind of hacking the username and password of the gradebook to go in and actually contribute all this stuff." And I'm like, "Wait, who are you?" He's like, "Well, I'm a second year math teacher or a third year math teacher." I'm like, "Maybe we try some different things." So anyway, long story short, what happened was I wasn't finding what I was needing, but had the backing of the board, had the backing of my team to say, you know, "Hey, I would like to try something different." And Chris brings a ton of experience, both with some of the platforms he's done in the past. He and I synergize really, really well. Let's bring him up to the board office and let's start a platform that would become Abre. And that's where we began. We began in a school district. And the beauty of that was we were able to really test and be innovative and try different things in a protected area, right? Right. We could try things. We could see what worked, what didn't work, get immediate feedback from our customers, being our teachers and our staff. And 3 years later, we were saving the district about $500,000. We were having all the other districts come to us saying we would like that. We had a pretty robust product. And that's where we went down to one of our seed investors and said, "Hey, can you guys help us? Because we're getting a little nervous. This is getting big." And they were like, "Yeah, you should do a business." So that's how we started. We just basically went and sat and said, "Should we do this? Should we leave public education and kick it off and leave?" And Abre was born, what, James? I think like 2018, I think we put ourselves, 17, 18, pre-COVID years is when we started. And it's been a wild ride since. So,
fantastic. James, tell us a little bit about your origin story, if you would.
Oh boy, that's a complex question, therefore answer. I would say my journey in my career has really been came from a family of educators. Initially, I wanted to be an educator myself, though I didn't really have the opportunity growing up to travel anywhere in the world. So I actually wanted to marry my passion for education with making a little bit more money to afford some plane tickets to go and visit and see the world. And so I went straight out of undergrad into a kind of an inside sales role for a company named Hobson's. I was there for 10 years almost, worked my way up, got my MBA, really kind of, you know, leaned all into this notion of lifelong learning and found myself every 18 to 24 months in new positions at that company, which was high growth at the time. And then I really took a leap of faith and left the East Coast to move the family out here to Salt Lake City, Utah, where I still live now 11 years later, to join a startup company called Mastery Connect as their head of sales. They're now owned by Instructure, a big LMS company. And then after that, really successful journey there, went to Dreambox Learning for 4 years, where I was kind of the head of sales and did a bunch of other really cool things. But what brought me to Abre almost exactly 4 years ago, Zach, isn't that crazy? In fact, it was exactly 4 years ago, come to think of it, mid-October when we first started talking. Kind of this little itty bitty company born from a product in a district, as we just heard Zach walk through the origin story in Cincinnati, where I'm originally from, born and raised, still have family back there at the time, even though I was in Salt Lake City. And it was just really fascinating, one, to hear how they had got to where they've gotten, how they solved their own problems, which isn't something that you often find in the space, how they really took a leap of faith themselves, which I like that kind of risk versus reward type mindset. I did that a couple times in my career and ultimately built a product that, quite frankly, I was astonished by the first time that I saw it. And so I ended up taking another leap of faith to join Zach and Chris in this really fun journey. Been a bit of a roller coaster, admittedly, but welcome to startup life. And at the end of the day, I kind of justified it and rationalized it by product, people, and purpose. We had an amazing product and it can only get better and stronger. People, between Chris and Zach and some of the early folks that were here, you could just tell not only did they have passion, but they had such a clear vision as to what they wanted to do, and they just
Zach's over here. Like, oh, stop it!
Oh, yeah. I got some follow-ups.
All right,
they just needed some help, really, from a go-to-market perspective. You know, so I grew my kind of career in sales and marketing and business development and corp development and those types of things. And it was clear that with a really great strategy, this product could really start taking off. And then finally, the purpose in terms of helping consolidate what I was already experiencing as a parent, and I had all obviously already seen as a head of sales for various other point solutions within the space, that it wasn't slowing down. If anything, it was exacerbated by the pandemic. So this idea of like consolidating data, ridding districts and organizations of silos, connecting everybody to data to actually help them daily, you know, like not once a month in a board meeting or once a year at a strategic plan review, but daily. How do we drive better instruction, or how do we drive better student support, or how do we connect parents to teachers to administrators in real time to drive them? So, you know, my origin story was ride a couple really great product waves within the market, but feel like there was an enterprise bigger play here at Abre. And that was 4 years ago. And so here we are, product, people,
and purpose. What happened the first time that you guys actually met? Whether if it was virtual, maybe, but
it
like
was
the first
virtual,
time.
It was in virtual. The pandemic.
Yeah, it was a pandemic, right? Yeah. What was the conversation like? Like, you guys may have had some communication online, or like, you know, through email or maybe chat or whatever. But what was the first, like, you know, the moment in the, like, the inciting incident scene in the movie where you guys get thrown together on a meeting for the first time? Like, what was that like? What were your impressions of each other?
Yeah. So I'll be curious to hear what James says here, because it's really funny. I very much remember, I think it went on for 2 hours first time we got together, and James kind of hit on something I really want to emphasize. We were really struggling with the market growth, the product growth, basically sales leadership in the concept of where we could take the company and go. Because, I mean, look, we're two teachers, right? And we knew hardcore, we needed someone with a lot of experience and talent here. So I can remember the first time meeting James, and we jumped into product. And again, like, we have different personalities, Chris and I do. And I'm more the, look how we can conquer the world. And I remember sitting with James and being like, check this out. This app could do this, and this app could do this, and this app could do this, and all this kind of stuff, which admittedly, probably cognitive overflow, a lot of stuff going on right there. But I just remember seeing you, James, getting super pumped and excited as, and you know, you probably had some of these light bulbs going on, but you're like, oh, this is how you could really grow a platform to become, I think the term you used was like the Salesforce of education, or how you could really take it to become the preeminent platform in K-12. And you really saw it, like, I mean, really quickly how the pieces fit together. And we talked to numerous people, and it's hard to communicate that. So I just remember hearing you get excited. And I don't know, like, I think you were like we think about opportunity and growth. That's just what I remember you getting super pumped about and just really excited about with the product, where it could go, how big it could become. That's what I remember. I also remember we got along splendidly. So that's like really right away, you want to be like, oh, is this the person I want to work with or work for or bring into the team? Again, product, people, purpose is what James said. And we've kind of all embraced that. You want to have a phenomenal culture at your company no matter what. And that means your leadership team really needs to do, get along well. And I mean, I say our team, like, it's nice if it's a plus, if you really like each other. So that as well. So I don't know, that's my memory of it. That first meeting and a little bit of like, hopefully, I hope this guy's buying it. I hope he's here, because I know there's a risk here in coming to such a small team. But that's what I remember.
James?
Yeah, it's funny. Similarly, I mean, I remember that conversation. For me, look, we're in the business, and we have dedicated our careers in a field that isn't as crazy lucrative as maybe some other industries, some other verticals, opportunities, even in software. But because of that, you run into a lot of phenomenal education companies that are really grounded in a great vision and a great purpose. They have a phenomenal people, but ultimately, kind of where the seams start tearing a little bit is at the product level. And that's why we have a lot of point solutions in this space. And so first and foremost, what caught my attention was the product vision. And you could tell that the product had been built against that vision, even if it still needed a little bit of tightening up on the product itself, but also the positioning, the product market fit, the stuff that you do in marketing, to how you communicate your value, and all of the things that we did in the first 24 months after I got here. But it was really, at the end of the day, the product combined with Zach and Chris that sold it for me. I mean, you very much so can walk into a lot of these opportunities and a lot of these conversations and have this big kind of pie in the sky, visionary type of a conversation. But practicality, where the rubber meets the road in the trenches, where clients actually want to buy it, they want to use it. Then when they use it, they actually get benefit from it. Then when they get benefit from it in our industry, they want to tell people about it, because a lot of educators play nicely in the same sandbox together. Like, it kind of check, 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 check. And it wasn't this kind of big philosophical, we can take over the world type of a thing. It was grounded in, no, we were actually just trying to solve these problems for ourselves. All of these neighboring districts started paying attention to what we were doing. They then wanted to buy it. And so we formed a company, kind of begrudgingly, admittedly. So it was that story combined with a phenomenal product, combined with phenomenal usage and client testimonials, that kind of solidified it for me, even though, admittedly, we didn't know what we were going to do. We didn't know who we were going to sell to. We didn't know who we were going to market and position ourselves to. We didn't know how we were going to get outside of the state of Ohio, where I think when I joined Zach, we had 37 clients, 36 of which were in the state of Ohio.
Yep.
So, you know, and many of them were kind of what we would consider friends and family, and, you know, kind of extensions of Zach and Chris network. So it was really a difficult decision, if that makes sense, given where I've kind of ascended to in my career. But at the same time, it was a really easy decision to say, if you're going to make a step, and it's going to be into the CEO role, what better place to do it than with a phenomenal product that's rooted in a phenomenal origin story, a company born from a product that people actually want to buy and use in our space, that's something that you can really, from a foundation perspective, get behind. And that was really exciting. So that, I think when Zach says, I got it, not only did I get the product, but I got what the product could eventually be in the hands of superintendents, the executive cabinet, principals, obviously staff, parents, students. I had never seen anything like it. And it was really cool to just kind of sit there and throw a bunch of spaghetti against the wall, as we like to say, and see what sticks. A lot of stuff stuck during that initial conversation.
Thanks for sharing that, James. Zach, bringing it back to the early journey of the company, like what were the biggest challenges? What were the low moments? What was, you know, if we're talking about the, you know, kind of the ebb and flow of this story, of this journey, like where were the hard parts?
So I think I should first explain a character trait of educators, particularly public educators, is we tend to be risk averse. All right. Yeah. And that's kind of because you can. Right? If you're doing well, you can coast until you retire. It's safe, all those different elements. Obviously, forming a startup and being an entrepreneur, there is insane amounts of risk and stress and sleepless nights and not wanting to let your team down. So I think we knew that going into it, but it's one thing to kind of abstractly know that, you know, even when people are running around saying like 9 out of every 10 startups fail, like waving it in front of your face, you know, but then going through the process. And I really want to like illustrate just kind of like this journey here that's just been going on. I would say the first couple of years, including the first probably year and a half, 2 years with James, for me felt like the existential crisis moment of company growth. What do I mean by that? You know, at one point early in, right when COVID was hitting, we weren't big enough yet. COVID was hitting. We were running out of money. There was very much the, how are we going to pay, you know, everyone around us, much less, you know, us and our families, especially when our product was still awesome and that belief that our product was so awesome, but we just weren't doing it. So that low point, that challenge that you get, and I think a lot of businesses go through that, but just that, out of the gate, we went kind of fast, and then COVID hit, and we completely flatlined, no pipeline, no growth, no nothing. We survived it, which is great. We survived it partially because of James coming in here and actually making some really key decisions. But I would definitely
want to come back to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely say that has been kind of the low points, is just that survival moment. And when we crossed a nadir, which again, I think happened a couple of years ago, where suddenly, even though this is still hard and still challenging, and even though I'm frustrated and sometimes get stressed for various things that come with running a company, especially as we're like really growing fast right now as we are, and the challenges that come with that, it's still not existential, or at least it doesn't feel existential. And in the back of my head, that just means like, oh, we did something good here, and it's there. It's not going to like disappear. And crossing that line was just really, I remember when that happened, it was just like, oh, suddenly I'm just feeling a lot better about sleeping at night. So it's kind of a generic statement, but again, like I think that moment of just being like, hey, are we going to do it? Are we going to make this through? Are we going to survive? And then we did. So which has been great. So.
James, what about you? What were some of the earliest challenges that you saw?
Well, aside from what Zach already alluded to, which is how do we make payroll 3 months after I got here, which, you know, admittedly is a bit of wartime CEO. You know, there's wartime CEO, there's peacetime CEO. I kind of feel like I walked into a bit of a wartime CEO moment, which is okay. You know, nobody said it was going to be easy, nor should it be. I mean, especially when you're trying to build, scale, grow, and, you know, and accelerate an impact business. You know, we're in the space of building products and solutions and scaling them and taking them to market to educators who don't have a lot of time for fluff, who don't have a lot of time for overpromising and under-delivering. And so it was worth it by, you know, by absolute margins. But at the same time, it was, oh, now that we figured out how we're going to keep the lights on and meet payroll, it immediately shifted to the biggest, I would say, challenge that presented us, which is, who do we want to be when we get older? Or how do we find our belly button moment, or whatever analogy you want to use, which is, how are we going to take this phenomenal product that everybody, when they look at it after a demonstration or you go on site and you present to them and there's a whole room full of educators and their jaws almost drop. How do we go from that to them actually buying it, implementing it, scaling it? You'll have to remember when I joined, it was in the middle of the pandemic, but it was also 12 months after the pandemic had started, where a lot of people had bought their learning management systems. They had bought their long-term strategy around assessment management. They had bought a lot of things around how they were going to now better communicate digitally to their parents, you know, because schools had closed down. And so a lot of the decisions had already been kind of made around what I'll just call administrative technology and software in K-12 education, at least for the foreseeable future. Yet we were getting all these amazing reactions when we were showing the product. And so the biggest challenge for me was, especially as a former head of sales, and I was the head of sales when I got here too, is how do you have all of this interest that isn't matriculating to actual business? Because business is what brings in cash. Cash is how you pay your employees, how you recruit and pay more employees. It's basic business 101. And so you're not motivated by necessarily the business itself. You're motivated by getting cash in the door to be able to hire more or pay more of your current team, build a really great team and build a really great culture to then be able to actually make the impact that you want to make. And we are a social impact business, and that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. It's not the cash. It's not the prospect of some lucrative exit or something like that, that years down the road. It's the impact that we can have. So what really was frustrating for me from a sales perspective was we have an amazing product that I see. Everybody is seeing it and saying, oh my gosh, this is the one-stop shop that we've been talking about, yet nobody's buying it. Why? And so unpacking that, it's almost a really complex multi-layered onion that you have to get to the heart of. In education, especially coming out of the pandemic, people were exhausted. Change management is a real thing. Asking your teachers to do one more thing, and it's not the thing. And by the way, they had already positioned all of the other stuff that they had bought on behalf of and put in front of the teachers for the last 12 months. They had already positioned this as the one thing. Oh, this is the one thing. Oh, this is the one thing. And so now you have exhausted teachers. You have just an exhausted system in a learning community that have just gone out and spent millions of dollars on either going deeper in the functionality and the technology that they already had, or buying brand new platforms, certainly buying new supplementary type of tools where students could learn remotely from home or, you know, digitally in a digital environment if it wasn't live instruction anymore. And so what we had to do was really put our head down and say, okay, what ultimately are we really, really good at? We're really, really good at consolidating data, and we're really, really good at consolidating people around that data. And then it was from that kind of epiphany combined with the, oh, like principals aren't going to buy this. It's kind of above their pay grade. CTOs, even former Zacks, in most cases aren't going to really buy this because they've been instructed to buy X, Y, and Z by the chief academic officer, the superintendent, or whatever it might be. And quite frankly, it's also it also takes a little bit of effort, you know, to partner with us and implement our platform, because we help you consolidate some of your platforms. We help you kind of change how you think about your technology environment or ecosystem. I say ecosystem lightly because every district that we talk to would suggest and would actually full adamantly admit that they don't have an ecosystem, right? So to move from kind of controlled chaos to a really beautiful tech stack ecosystem requires a little bit of an effort, you know. And coming out of the pandemic, again, when everybody was exhausted, we weren't finding that people were really looking to do it. But then when we elevated our conversation to the superintendent, to the executive level cabinet, and they were the ones, especially the newer ones, because there was about 50% turnover in the superintendent seat at that time. When they saw our product, they then started reacting in a way that was super favorable. They actually started buying it, implementing it for them, for their own purposes. And that's really where things took off. But that took a solid 18 to 24 months to kind of come to a realization after I got here that, wow, despite having a really great product, if you don't have a product market fit, if you don't have the right value drivers, if you don't have the right value proposition from a marketing perspective, if you don't know your ideal persona and your ideal client profile with who you should be actually going after, it's going to be really difficult. So I think it took, and I'm glad that it did take, even though there were a lot of sleepless nights even after I got here, you know, it took the time necessary to have enough conversations with prospective clients and your current clients, even though there weren't many, but boy, were they adamant that our value was kind of, you know, entrenched in this all data and all stakeholders. And then from there, that really created an opportunity and a roadmap of what we were going to continue to innovate around, prioritize from a product management and product kind of invention perspective. And a deployment perspective and what we were going to say no to. And I think along that journey, we built a muscle of saying no to a lot of different things and saying yes to the one or two things that we could kind of ground our value prop in the marketplace around. And so that was really challenging because it didn't happen immediately. And I'm an incredibly impatient person. And here I am. Every single demo that we give to all of these prospective district clients of ours, they all love it. Yet they're not buying it. Why? And unpacking the why there was really quite challenging. But if I had to do it all over again, I totally would. Because look at us now. We figured it out.
Yeah. Well, and the, you know, the why, like inertia, as Zach, you alluded to it a few minutes ago, like inertia is a powerful, powerful thing in this business. And you know, I, like to some degree, there's some degree of selection mechanism there. And you know, to another degree, that's just business. Like inertia is a thing everywhere. Thank you for tuning in. Watch this space for more thought leadership in K-12 education. Thank you, James. Thank you, Zach. Looking forward to hearing more from you guys. I'm Ben Wiggins, signing off.